can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games. I'm Anne Maria DeMars, and today we are very, very fortunate to have two amazing special guests, Gene LaBelle and his lovely assistant, Kelly Cunningham. You can't see her, but just take my word for it that she's lovely. So you probably all know, but in case there's two or three of you who've been in a coma since 1952, I just want to let you know that Judo Gene LaBelle has been a stuntman in thousands of movies, TV shows. He's also been an actor. You've probably seen him in Rush Hour, in Reno 911, where he's completely hilarious, and also on Jimmy Kimmel. Do yourself a favor, go to YouTube and type in Jimmy Kimmel, Gene LaBelle, and you will be glad you did. But there's more. Gene was also the Grand National Judo Champion. Yes, he was one of the people who is a super badass that I looked up to when I was a kid. If you don't know what the Grand National Champion is, when they have weight divisions, the winners of all the weight divisions fight off. They don't do that anymore because they figured it was dangerous, but they did it back in Gene's day, and Gene won, being one of the very few, won twice, one of the very few non-Asians competing at that time very successfully. He was the Grand National Judo Champion in 1954 and 1955. And to follow that up, he won the first officially sanctioned mixed martial arts match in December of 1963. He beat the boxer Milo Savage, choked him out. So that's a little bit about Judo Gene LaBelle. And I wanted to tell you guys something I did that was really stupid when I was young. And that is, my grandma was born in 1900, and I used to live with her, and she would tell me these stories about, you know, growing up on an island off the coast of Venezuela, and she married my grandfather, who was living in Trinidad, and then they took a boat up to the United States, and she would tell me all these stories, and I didn't pay any attention because I was 15 or 20 or whatever at the time, and I was amazing and brilliant and fascinated. My grandma was old. And now I just kick myself because I wish I had recorded those stories, because woman had a century of memories by the time she passed away, and she had seen the world change. And so my grandma's not around and Jean's not 99 yet, but I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk to someone who has seen the world change. And the first question I have for you, Gene, is about Hollywood. You started in stunt work when?
I started Anna Marie in 1955. When I turned pro, and I'm doggone lucky I did, because it's unionized. I know a lot of people don't agree with that, but now at my age, 104, I have lifetime insurance from the Screen Actors Guild. Also, I get lots of money in residuals and a retirement, and I'm in pig's heaven.
Well, that sounds good if you're a pig. Could you let me know some of the changes? And in all seriousness, I mean, that is good advice, that people badmouth unions, but unions can negotiate things for you, like healthcare and residuals. How have you seen things change since you started 50-plus years ago in Hollywood?
Gee whiz, that'd take me 2 hours to even think about this. It's changed. The people have changed. When I started off, there were like 40 working stuntmen, and that's it. And now there's thousands, and they all vie for the same job. Things were a little closer then. In 1955, in the 50s, people would do for each other. If you were a stuntman, you had to do cars, high falls, burns, scuba diving, and if you couldn't do it, there was always a cowboy to tell you how to put a flank strap on a horse and go for it, or scuba diving, they could certify you, and it was more of a family. Now it seems people are all for themselves, and it's a good for them, bad for a lot of people.
Speaking of people, I heard that you were really, really good with stunts with cars and motorcycles. Is that correct?
You know, I'm so doggone modest. I'd have to say mediocre. But, you know, that's my forte, and especially motorcycles and racing cars. Wasn't the best at anything, but a lot better than most. And I'd get called for motorcycles, jumps on a couple. One of the shows, I jumped a train on a motorcycle, no big deal. But people didn't know that I did judo, boxing, wrestling, kempo, shotokan, taekwondo, all those things. Because the karate or the judo guys didn't get the work. The motorcycle guys, the car guys, and the horse people got all the work.
But you did a lot of fight scenes too, right? I think I remember seeing some.
Yes, I had, most of the shows you do are some kind of a fight scene where you end up going through a wall or going through some glass plates. Yeah, but it all comes from the judo and wrestling background of taking falls.
Would it be fair to say, and I don't know, so if you can say to me that's completely stupid, not true, and it won't hurt my feelings, but it sounds like if you're more versatile, that if you can do cars and motorcycles and fight scenes, that you get more work as a stunt person?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely, Anna Marie. If you're just a wrestler or martial arts, and they say, okay, you're going to do a 40-foot high fall, hey, you're out of luck. You've got to do a little bit of everything. It's not easy. People call me up and says, hey, I can do stunts. I'm tough. And I said, can you do car stuff? And he said, well, I drive fast when I go down the street. I says, but can you do a 180 or a 360 or a 720 and land on the spot for take one, take two, take three? And they said, well, I've never done it before. And I says, well, get a job and go back to school.
That's good advice in general, I think. That I meet a lot of people, too, that, you know, we run a software company and they're good at maybe sound design. But unless you're going to work for a really big company, you could be good at game design or you could be good at coding. But if you're going to be in a startup, everybody needs to learn a little bit of everything. And it seems like now a lot of careers are kind of like a startup. But before I get off on that, I want to go to my motorcycle question. Is it true that you and your wife got married riding in the back of motorcycles, or is that a myth?
No, that is. Well, you want me to be truthful about it, and since my wife isn't here, I can be truthful. I'm a heathen. My wife is a very religious person and likes to go to church on Sunday. Everybody knows that's the day you ride motorcycles and race them. So I says, if you want to get married and you're going to do it on the back of a motorcycle, the front of a motorcycle, and it's going to be on a Sunday. And I said, score for me. I don't have to get married, but we were living in sin anyway. And that's not really you brag about when you're a Christian, that you live in sin. But the only difference is now that we got married, she's the boss. When we lived in sin, I was the boss. Anyway, we got married going down the street and doing a wheelie, you know, riding on the back of one wheel. And
so did you have mics to say the vows? Is that how you did it?
No, we just did it and pantomime. Sometime I'll show you the outtakes on it. It's quite kind of humorous.
Wait, you did multiple takes of your wedding?
Oh, no. when we got back to, we got married up in my cabin where I had 30 or 40 motorcycles. And then we had to do a voiceover back at the cabin. And she was a little bit inebriated. On the helmet, she put flowers in it, in the helmet. And I says, no, it goes on the head. And when I was doing the wheelies, I put my legs over her legs so she wouldn't fall off.
Wait. You did a take of your wedding, and then you did a voiceover of the filming for your wedding.
No, just say, hey, do you take this woman to be whatever they say? And
wife.
Yeah, and we had fun, and there was a... My son was driving a pickup truck, and the minister gal was, she's in the back of the truck. She said, I've never done this before.
I'll bet.
I says, when you're around Jean LaBelle, you do things a little different. Anyway, just to segue ahead a little bit, in the morning she woke up and she says, we're married, and we got married on a motorcycle. And I said, you're kidding. We're married and got married on a motorcycle. I'm selling all my motorcycles. Then that was our first argument. You wouldn't sell one of your motorcycles for one hair on the top of my head. And that was our first of many arguments.
All of which Midge won, right?
She was ahead on points. A couple of times I thought I went to a draw, but Anna Marie, if I had you as the shimbong or the referee, maybe I would have got a better decision.
Well, my husband wanted to get married, and I was not enthused because I said, you know, I was married, my husband passed away, I have three kids, I have enough on my plate, and, you know, I was more for the living in sin part, and he was absolutely not. We're going to get married, we're going to have a baby, and it's all going to be above board, and yeah, he still says that's the only argument with me he ever won.
Hey, Jonah, you know what I love? Seven Generation Games.
I know, they're the best. I got them for all my nieces and nephews. They teach math and social studies. They love the games.
I wanted to get them for my niece in third grade, but she only has an iPad. I just wish they had an app.
But they do.
What?
Yes, Making Camp. It's the first app from Seven Generation Games, and it's out now in the Apple App Store.
So it will just be in the App Store?
Yes. All you'll have to do is search for Making Camp, or you can go to the Seven Generation Games site right now and enter your email to be notified as soon as the Android app is live.
Wow, that's awesome. And they will still sell the other games too, right?
Yep, you can still get Spirit Lake, Fish Lake, and Forgotten Trail just by going to sevengenerationgames.com/buy to get them today.
This is Jonathan Little from Little Labs. You can find more information about us at littlelabs.com, and you're listening to More Than Ordinary.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games. We still have our guest here, Jean LaBelle, and his lovely assistant, Kelly, and both of them are going to give us a little bit of insight into the city of Los Angeles and how it's changed. So in the first segment, we talked a little about how Hollywood has changed. But Jean, I know you traveled all over the world, but you're pretty much an L.A. native, right?
Well, I was born in the Los Angeles area, but I got a chance when I was in the service I was in the Coast Guard for a few years, and I got to travel a little bit there. I got on a USO tour, got to travel to Korea and China and Japan there. In the movies, mostly, I've been to Europe. I've been to certain countries, South America.
But you always came home to Los Angeles.
Well,
you didn't move away ever.
At that time, I was living with in my mother's house, so I got free rent. Where else did you go when you're cheap?
And let's talk about your mother, Eileen Eaton, right? She was that's her name, right?
Eileen Eaton. She was a woman boxing promoter. She promoted hundreds of fights. She had an auditorium in Los Angeles, which is still there, called the Olympic Auditorium. And now it's a Korean church that's been sold and resold. A lot of history there. And if I never see the back of my neck again, you've got to talk to Kelly Cunningham, my boss. I say that because I got bamboo shoots under my fingernails if I say something wrong. And she's doing this documentary on the Olympic Auditorium and Eileen Eaton, and she's more articulate than I am.
Well, Kelly, can you tell us a little bit about that? Because, I mean, that's pretty... She was a boxing promoter when?
Well, Eileen started as a boxing promoter in 1942, basically when very few women were in the workforce anyway. So that was something that was pretty rare for that to happen. But she was a woman in a man's world. And not only that, but she was a very complicated woman, very ambitious. And
what years was that when she was running?
She started promoting boxing in 1942. This is just after the war had started. And, you know, not many women were in the workforce just yet. But she had this ambitious spark, and she was able to convince the owner of the LA Athletic Club to let her go ahead, watch what was going on at the Olympic Auditorium, tell him what's going on, report on the business, and in turn he said, why don't you run the place for me? And she ran the place for nearly 50 years, promoting boxing and wrestling and concerts and all kinds of things that happened there.
And I heard she was the first woman inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Is that right?
Yes, she was. She was probably the only female boxing promoter in, I would say, the world up until like maybe 1970. And she was known the world over as a boxing promoter. First with her husband, Cal, but mainly everybody knew in boxing that she was the brains of the operation. And she ran the place with an iron fist.
And you're producing this documentary, is that right?
Yes, I am producing. I've put 5 years into Jean, his mother, and she's such a fascinating woman, such a fascinating story. And then learning about her makes me actually appreciate Jean a whole lot more.
Well, we're going to ask Jean some more questions, but not until you promise me to come back and do another episode of More Than Ordinary where we talk about you and your career, because you can't see, Kelly, but there aren't a lot of African-American women producers, and I would love to have you come back. Maybe we'll have you come sometime also if we can get a joint show. I'd like to have you personally, and then maybe we can get Kiana Patterson, who is a tech executive, because I think it'd be great to have you guys kind of talk together.
Well, right. Sure. That would be great. Thank you.
Oh, good. I didn't even have to armbar you for it or anything. All righty.
You don't have to twist my arm.
I would if I had to, just so you know.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend, and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.